Hey, this is Philip Sahagun, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello and hello, hello to everyone new and old. I'm Scott here. Welcome back to another week of Verbal Shenanigans. And that is Mike down in the sweet peachy state of Georgia.
You know they have other things other than peaches down here.
Listen, you know how it is. People assume in Jersey we're all a bunch of Guidos. You know, and that there's nothing nice in Jersey, but, you know, there's a couple nice things.
We're still trying to figure it out, but, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, Jersey's like, you got to break it down into sections. Like, there's the cities, then there's the beaches, then there's the mountains, and, you know, there's a little bit of everything. But is
are we getting sponsored by New Jersey, the way you're talking?
The whole state, yes.
Come to New Jersey, thanks to Verbal Shenanigans.
Are there a lot of peaches in Georgia? Like, do you notice a uptick in peach sightings?
Not really. I mean, they're on all the signs. I mean, instead of Easy Pass, they have Peach Pass down here. And
really? Peach Pass?
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, I don't see it as much. I even remember when I first came down here, like, going to stores, like, going up to my dad, I'm like, yo, dad, you know, aren't there supposed to be some, like, peaches around? He's like, you just gotta wait till the peach season. When they come, they're gonna be
look out.
The funny story is, like, when my brother came down here, when he was working at a company, they were like very anti-Northerners. This is like the prime of Northerners coming down and taking Southerners' jobs.
Yes.
So they hated everything about it. So
we were the Northerners were like what Republicans think Mexicans are.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. We're just taking over.
We're just sneaking in, taking over everybody's jobs.
Yeah. So like they're busting on my brother, and like my brother was going up to Jersey, and he's like, I'm going to come back with some Jersey peaches. I'm going to show you all what real peaches are like. And all he did was when he came back, he went to the local Kroger and bought like a big bag of local peaches and took the stickers off. And every Southerner took one bite. Oh, this is the most disgusting thing on the planet. This is the worst thing I've ever tasted in my life. And he just laughed his ass off and all.
yeah, of course, you know, because everyone's full. But I'm sure it's like anything, right? Like you don't go. I'm sure you don't go to Ohio, Idaho, and I'm sure it's just not like potatoes everywhere. I'm sure people are like sick of it. Like, oh, cool. Like, where's all the potatoes at? You know, like,
yeah.
Then again, I've never been to Idaho, so it could be like that. It very well could.
Yeah. The next time I go to Boise State for a football game, I'm gonna be like, I hate this blue turf, and there's not enough potatoes down here.
That's correct. And then throw potatoes.
Exactly.
But anyway, we are Verbal Shenanigans. If you are first tuning, if this is your first tune in, again, like I said, I'm Scott and that's Mike, and we're kind of a little bit of a variety show, I guess you could say, in a way. Conduct interviews every week, have a bunch of interesting guests on, you know, talk about life, and then I don't know, do some stupid games along the way, and that's kind of roll that all up, and that's kind of how you get our show. So we're like a smorgasbord.
If you can figure it out, that ain't us. That's the easiest answer in the world.
If there was a gun to your head, do you think you could spell smorgasbord?
I'm pretty sure without the gun it would be the same result.
Like if they were like, I'm gonna kill you unless you could spell smorgasbord. Very weird. Very
like,
weird terrorist.
Nice knowing you, babe. I love you, honey.
Very, very weird terrorist group, but
man, ISIS got weird all of a sudden. What the hey?
That's one of my favorite.
Check them out, Siri, and they're doing some weird stuff here.
It's one of my favorite Patrice O'Neill bits. He talks about, like, you know, if someone had a gun to my mom's head and they were like, I need you to spell restaurant. And he's like, oh, no. He's like, he's like, oh, I'm going to kill my. He's like, oh, mom, I love you. R-E-S. Oh, T. Tor. Tor. All right. Give me another word. Give me another word. I miss that guy, man. That guy was unbelievable. I still watch, like, Tough Crowd clips at night sometimes, like, to fall asleep to. And that show was him, man. He made everything. He's a comic that never got his due until he was dead. And then a lot of people realize how amazing he was. And he never got
Everybody's said the same thing. He just screwed himself over. You know, something about his personality where it's like he could not. I guess he's one of those guys who can't, like, report to somebody, for lack of a better term, because every time his comedy just was solid the entire time, kept moving up, then somebody start talking about giving him a show, and then he would just, like, flat out just sabotage it.
Yep, and he was, like, the biggest sabotager. It was, like, a joke amongst his friends, apparently, too. Like, you know, like, he'd just blow everything up, and he just did it his way, all the way to the end. But, it's crazy. He's been dead since 2011 already.
Jesus.
It's hard.
Him and Bernie, man. Those two guys were just solid. You know,
hard to imagine.
The stand-up.
Hard to imagine it's been since 2011. But, Berlo, we got a little announcement this week, huh?
We do, Scotty. We're on another platform now. We just joined WHBJ-DB. They're Cutting Edge Talk Radio out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We just joined their internet radio platform. You can listen to us Sunday nights at 10 p.m. And their site is www.spreaker.com/show/WHBJ-DB.
All right.
And we just recently hooked it up, you know, along with Discovery County Network and
ComingRightUp.org.
We've been moving along with new platforms, and if you're listening to us, welcome.
Yeah.
We're glad you're listening.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll keep listening to us and tell us how you feel.
And we are also part of the BS Podcast Network. So there are lots of places to listen to us, and we're happy to be part of all these all these various new platforms seem to happen pretty quickly. We suddenly got on three out of nowhere, but it's nice to know that we, other than our just downloads on our normal thing, that we're being played somewhere. And maybe one of you will hear us and be like, God, that show is just amazing. Like, we got to pay these guys a lot of money, bring them in right away.
If you're a sponsor and all, we can take a few extra bucks, you know. Get the funds going to pay off for these weekly bills and everything.
You know? Yeah, or fly us in, give us, like, a, you know, triple-figure job, you know.
Yeah.
Doing just this, like, you know, I'm okay with
it. Yeah, we'll sponsor anything. MyPillow.com.
That's it.
There you go.
But
send us money.
So, Berlo, what are we coming up on here? I guess we don't have a lot of time before we guess. I know we got some martial arts in the house, some karate, some different things going on. What we got?
I'm confused. Am I introducing him? Or?
Oh, yeah. We might as well.
Oh, okay. That was a weird setup for Berlo. Who we got?
So. Who we got?
You know. We got Philip Sahagon. He is a 7-time national weapons champion and a 3-time International Martial Arts Council grand champion. You might have seen him on America's Got Talent back in season 5. He's also done some other reality shows in China, like K-Star Global Competition and Jackie Chan's Disciple. And we're going to be talking to him about all of the work that he's doing, both on reality shows and teaching kids and what it is like in the martial arts world.
Did you ever take karate as a kid?
I did not.
I did not. Never had any experience. I was always curious when it came to, like, I feel like every kid who was like in elementary school who took karate was like, oh yeah, I'm a black belt, and they were like the biggest wusses in the class, but they were all like somehow black belts.
Yeah, I kind of remember I had a little gripe with a kid in fifth or sixth grade, somewhere like that, and we would talk trash back and forth, and then his ending comment was always, I'm a black belt. Needless to say, the one time we fought, didn't see much structure to his fighting style. It was just like ducking my fists was the basic answer to what occurred there.
Wait. So you guys actually ended up fighting?
Yeah. I remember we were in the lunchroom, and like one of his buddies came up, and then he's like, his name was Rocky Kim, if I remember. And it's like, Rocky said blah, 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 blah. And then I was just there with my friends, and I'd say, well, you go tell him blah, 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 blah. And like my friends would be like, oh! And
I wonder what the insult was. Like what you possibly could have said about him in third grade.
I don't know. No, it was a sixth grade.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then you could be pretty bad. Middle school kids are rough.
Yeah, and I think the same kid went back and forth from him whispering something to him to telling me something to me telling him to say something. It just got to the point where I'm like, you know what? If he's got to say something, tell him to come over and say it to my face. And then all the friends, oh, because they knew something was about to happen.
I just picture.
And he walked up and he said some crap, and I stood up and I said some crap, and I remember throwing a fist of some sort. I forget if he pushed me, and because usually my style is I'll give you, as long as you do the first punch, and then I'll start a fight. I'm not a guy who'll just do it myself, and all. And I kind of just had the haymaker style where I just brought it up in the air and threw it down, kind of fist style.
So in this fight, you were the Kimbo Slice of that you were just, you were just going all or nothing.
Basically, look at Conor McGregor around the eighth round where he's, like, throwing his punches sideways for some reason. That was kind of my style, but to be fair, my friend the black belt didn't have that much better of a style. So, needless to say, I mean, nobody, like, went home with bloody noses or anything like that, but I'll at least pat myself on the back and say I took that one because he was not landing anything on me.
I'm picturing that the kid who had the job of like going back and forth and like, Mike, he said your mom smells funny. Well, you tell him his mom is large.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no classic one-upsmanship there. Like, we're not going to the Uptown Comedy Club with the material that was going back and forth there, but it was an interesting moment in my life, to say the least.
Yeah, I never got into the whole karate thing. I almost want to ask him in a few minutes if he like why that is, why kids get black belt. Like, is it just to keep them in classes? And then, like, when does it actually become like, you know, serious where you got to earn these things? Now, I'm like, since you're saying that you have no problem defeating black belts, maybe we can arrange something with Philip here. You're 1-0.
I feel he has a color higher than black. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's like probably diamond, platinum kind of deals where I'm not sure if my, you know, haymaker style is really going to throw him for a loop.
We could have – okay, listen, we've been lucky to be featured on a major sport before, right? We had on World Chase Tag. We had Verbal Shenanigans thing. We could have an octagon match, mixed martial arts. Where you and Philip go. It could be the main event. We could have other people from the show fight. We could have, like, Jim Miller take on, like, Natty Bumper Car. We could make it a whole pay-per-view.
Just a whole night of comedians getting murdered by professional athletes.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah, so you know how, like, we make, like, basically $0 on the show, like, ever. You're telling me if we advertise, like, a bunch of comics, like, generally, like, awkward guys with facial hair doing comedy, and they were fighting. Let's see, we had Jim Miller. We could bring Gary Goodridge on. He might not know where he is, but he could take on like Mark Riccadonna. There's a nice heavyweight belt
there.
There
we go. Well,
see,
I like this undercard.
I'm building.
It's kind of like in wrestling and all the invasion angle, except it's a bunch of comedians just running into UFC fights and getting destroyed.
Exactly. But then I'm thinking maybe we could spice it up. We could bring like Mo Vaughn, who looks like he can definitely, you know, throw a punch or two. We could face him against like this could be like the second to the main card, like the co-main event. We could have him like go against Pete Corielli.
That'd be interesting. I'd like that.
Lenny Dykstra versus Don Jameson.
See, Lenny might be the scariest because I don't know what's going on in his head, but I can guarantee you no fist can knock out anything that's in there. That's like a mystery right there that a fist cannot solve, if you will.
What I'm saying, it would be a great event, and I know people. We put that up for $5 online to just watch comedians get destroyed. I think we got something here. With, of course, you headlining the event against Philip.
Well, I mean, once I'm finally a headliner in comedy. Thank you.
Well,
it finally happened.
You listen in the red corner. With a record of 1-0 against Black Belt.
Against Rocky Kim back in 1989. Give it up for the Burl. Michael Burl.
Michael the Burl's Burlew. You gotta like, yeah. Bruce Buffer it.
No, see, the Burl's goes in front of the Michael Burlew.
Oh.
You know, that.
Okay.
That's just how I roll. Now, granted, I got a feeling you'll pay Philip an extra few hundred, just like not the living crap out of this guy for that nickname, but still.
Yeah, I mean, we can get Daniel Pacina to come on, who is Scorpion. I see videos of him online, always twirling blades around and doing kicks, and you know he could take on like KP Burke or something.
Oh, I'd be totally down for that. No, we got to get this pay per view. If we can, we should make the poster and put it on Instagram.
Verbal Shenanigans, pay-per-view, a night to remember. I like it. But I guess it's time. You know, I guess he's a little bit higher than breaking boards and telling people he's a black belt in third grade or sixth grade or whatever. Let's get Philip Sahagun on the line. First off, I want to thank you for coming on for a few minutes and giving us a couple minutes of your time here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Sorry it took so long to coordinate.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
No problem, man.
We're used to it. Now, where are we calling you at? Where do you live?
I'm in Las Vegas, so Nevada.
All right.
And today I have the luxury of being in my home doing the interview, so it's nice.
Now, you're kind of a hard guy to break down from the beginning here. You got a lot of different, you know, I guess credits and skills. You've obviously have experience in and have been doing all your life. But were you a kid? Did you start off martial arts like we see like these like 4-year-olds in karate class? How did you get this all started?
So my mother and father met in the martial arts. I was born into the community, more or less. They told me that when I was quite little, they would literally take me into the stroller and park me in front of classes while they were training. And on my father's side of the family, his dad was a pro boxer in Mexico, and he picked up karate and Western boxing. And my mom met my dad through her martial arts training, where she did kickboxing and also karate.
So when was the first time, like, how old were you when you, like, really started?
I mean, officially, I was starting at about 5.
Wow.
So in about 1994, 1993, my family opened a school in Costa Mesa, California, so Southern California. And the school was boxing, kickboxing, and karate. So we had, like, 3 separate programs. And basically, being that I grew up there, my family just kind of sent me into each program. And then as I got a little bit older, I graduated to doing pretty much 1 hour of each every day after school. So I'd be like 5 to 6 days a week doing roughly 3 hours a day.
And, now, when you're going through these different types, is it easy to, is it something that can just translate over each style to one another, or are you totally, once the hour's over, doing a totally different setup for these styles of fight?
I remember not grasping any similarities at that early age, because of course you're still a kid and you just want to run around and play, and you'll do what people are saying, but you don't quite put a lot of depth of thought into it. And being that most of my instruction when I was little was in a group class setting, I wasn't getting, let's say, focused one-on-one attention. I remember when I was sent to do like boxing tournaments, sometimes I would forget where I was and I would start kicking, you know? My parents would be like, what are you doing? You know, this is a boxing match. I'm like, but I was losing, you know? I couldn't understand why, you know, like why was it not okay to kick? But then I'm like, oh yeah, it's because it's called boxing. That's right. And that was the limited scope of my view. But I was quite young, so yeah.
Now, let me ask you something. We were talking before we had you on about, like I remember when I was, like, in grade school, a lot of kids, like, who said they were, like, in karate and whatnot would be like, oh, they'd be in, like, fourth grade or whatever, and they'd be like, oh, I got a black belt. And you'd see them and be like, I don't really, you know, that doesn't quite make sense, you know. What is the, is there, like, a side to the martial arts world where they just, like, they're, you know, kids are not really earning them, they're just in class, and then like an actual real side of martial arts that we're not seeing? Like, there's got to be something there that's off.
I mean, for you guys' background, do you guys practice martial arts also? Yeah,
no,
unfortunately not.
At ever in your lives did you dabble or something?
No, I hit a heavy bag at the gym. That's about the extent of my martial arts experience.
Yeah,
fair enough. Well, of course, like anything, some things can be commercialized and some can be taken to the level of commercialization to bastardization, you know. Yep. There are a lot of programs out there nowadays. Now that I'm older, my perspective, my viewpoint has shifted to say a kid black belt can be okay as long as you call it a junior black belt. Mm-hmm. And the kid understands that it's not a black belt, if that makes sense. But in the old days, yeah, to get a black belt means that you underwent a transformation of actually who you are as an individual. So to hold a rank and the title of like a black belt in any martial arts system actually means you changed who you are, not just as a fighter, but as a human being. And so to perceive that any child can do that in a holistic, transformative way is kind of, I think it is a kind of limited view, but you might give a belt nowadays to say, this kid memorized some stuff pretty well.
Right.
So on the level of memorization, you know, like some kids nowadays, they play Beethoven quite well and they're 7. So on a musical equivalent, maybe we say on the compulsory requirements, you are a black belt, but in the traditional sense of martial arts, I don't think it's a black belt.
Yeah.
I mean, I taught a lot of students who were children who were 12 years old, who are like secondary black belts, but secondary black belt was a title that took me 15 years to get.
Mm-hmm.
I think my first black belt took about 10 years, you know. The basic rule of thumb nowadays is people try to say, well, it should take you about 4 years to get the rank of a black belt in a general martial art, because that's how long it takes you to get a degree from a college. But what they're forgetting is that the prerequisite before that is you went through 12 years of grade school first. And then you went to the 4 years of college.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, when you were growing up, did you automatically knew this was going to be your lifestyle, or were you still like balancing, oh, I might want to be a doctor and this is a hobby?
I mean, I was actually, I got into sports medicine for a while, and prior to that, I was in college studying business management, just trying to get some general just business education of some kind, but to be honest, I had no clue where I was going with that.
Right.
Then I switched and got into the kinesiology, which was a little more applicable, but yeah, somehow I just managed to make it a thing, and you know, so far so good that it's been a life, career, and a path for my whole life. I actually have not had another job other than martial arts, so I've been really pretty blessed with it. Huh. Yeah.
That is pretty amazing. Now, obviously, I think, especially in the United States, there's a bit of a, at least mixed martial arts, but martial arts and jiu-jitsu and a big upheaval. Like, there's, it's definitely become bigger and bigger with MMA on TV, and, you know, UFC recently with an ESPN deal, and it's fighters are becoming known, and all sorts of like disciplines are seeming to become pretty popular. Are you seeing that in your personal life? Are you seeing more opportunity? Like you said, you haven't had a job. Are you seeing more opportunity for, one, I guess, work in your line of work? And two, are you seeing a whole new generation of kids getting very interested in martial arts?
Yeah, I'm kind of excited for the overall development. At first, I was a little bit nervous where it was going, because there was a lot of conflict with the traditional ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think that there's starting to be a settled harmonization, and basically the sport aspect is starting to learn from the past, and the past is starting to learn from the sport, which is always complementary. When I was growing up, I remember seeing people who are professional martial artists who are fighters was not a very pretty picture. I rarely met someone who was a professional fighter who kind of had their life together in their later years, and met a lot of people who were how you say, like, punch drunk, you know?
Right.
Like, they've been hit in the head too many times. And I remember that all my journey to studying college and also deciding what I wanted to do with martial arts, there's a short time there where I thought about being a professional fighter for MMA. And actually, as I got into a martial art that's called the Wushu,
right,
which is a performance-based martial art, I was training at the same time jiu-jitsu. So I devoted 4 years to that from the period of 2004 to about 2008. And ultimately what happens, I ended up doing a TV show in China. And when I came back home, a fighter from our gym who was training for a headlining fight in the UFC ended up losing his match in a pretty negative way. And I looked at it and I said, you know what? There has to be some other kind of way. Right. So, but that's, at that time, people were getting paid peanuts to put their life and limb on the line. But at the same time, whenever you're trying to make a livelihood off of your body, it's going to bring with it some kind of suffering, you know?
Yeah.
Well, let me, when you do these different reality shows or game shows, I don't know what you want to call it, like the K-Star, and you also did Jackie Chan's Disciple. Is there kind of like a difference in, I don't know how to word this, I almost want to say entertainment kind of displays versus your natural training? I'm not sure if that's right, but.
So you're just kind of saying like the difference between the performance aspect of martial arts and the traditional practice of martial arts, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I was little, it was around the time that Power Rangers were hitting the shores and everything was kind of changing. It was becoming super popular, because you probably remember that during the 90s, like Jean-Claude Van Damme, Rocky was around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you had this like very testosterone injected image. You had American Ninja, Ninja Turtles, all these like just ninja things just going out into the pop culture. And when someone found out, that was a friend of mine, found out I was a black belt, he goes, oh, so you could do a backflip, right? And I remember thinking, like, what? Like, that has nothing to do with, I never learned anything like a backflip before, you know? Because all day we just punched bags and sparred and maybe did a couple things in the air, but not much. I remember that I didn't even know that you could compete in forms until, like, I was almost a teenager, which means, like, I didn't know that you could actually compete in solo routines and get a medal until I was a teenager. So the idea to say, okay, you're a martial artist, so you can do a backflip or you can do some high spinning kicks, this was a relatively new idea. And when I went to those shows, I remember thinking for the first time, just asking, like, is this actually martial arts? And my initial opinion was a standoff on it. Like, should I put in the time and the effort to actually learn these things, or just say, it's not worth my time? But then I thought, if I'm going towards the movement of entertainment, what's my reason for not learning these things? And I realized it was actually probably fear-based, because I said, well, the truth is I actually can't do it. And if I can't do it, that's why I'm trying to kind of weaken or play down the value of being able to do that as an athlete. So I started to train it. I started to do some of those movements, but ultimately I always kind of compartmentalized it to say, this is a performance skill. And my categorization is, a performance skill of martial arts is meant to be shown for other people. and martial arts is supposed to be done for yourself, which sounds selfish, but it's about self-preservation and self-improvement. And to perform that for someone else is a completely different thing. Instead of training in, you're actually showing out.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, there's definitely got to be a split when you're doing these shows with high production and whatnot, and you know, millions of people watching. But give us an insight to, you know, you said at one point you were doing an hour a day training. What about now, as you're older and are you still training every day in multiple different things? What are you up to nowadays?
Lately, I've been spending a lot of time focusing on the family, but right now I just signed a contract to get ready for a new show with the company Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, nice.
So working on that. So for me, that equals you sign the paper. Now you get into a training camp similar to what an athlete or a fighter would do. So you're trying to commit 2 to 3 hours a day of any kind of thing that you need to do for the job. So for this, I'm doing weight training, flexibility training, kicks and jumps. Basically, that's like what I'm doing and pushing towards a 3-month deadline to prepare. Hmm.
So now you would be performing this on a tour or nightly or like a residency kind of show?
Nightly. So actually, I moved from California to Vegas in late 2014 to join a Cirque du Soleil show called Zumanity.
Oh, nice.
I played that for 3 years where we had to do 400 and I think 50 or 70 shows a year.
That's it?
Yeah, so that keeps you, you know, active. We're doing 10 shows a week. And in addition to the shows, which are about 90 minutes long, we'd have to come in early, do trainings, do rehearsal to prepare for doing your act.
Wow.
So that it does keep you busy.
Yeah, I mean, I went to one of those shows before, and it's absolutely mind-blowing, like, the amount of just gymnastics and martial art and acting and everything that goes into it. I'm just amazed that someone can actually, like picture that first and then put it out to a performance. It's, like, amazing, like, or directed or whatever you want to call it.
It definitely has its own vision, that's for sure.
100%.
When I was little, I definitely never thought that was an avenue that I was headed. But slowly over the years, I actually got a little more into performing. And what happened was my family told me from a young age, hey, we want to create like a little team to actually help promote the school that would go around and perform. So they gave me a couple like different kids and teenagers. And I was a teenager myself. And they said, try to coordinate something like a 30-minute show and make it cool. So just with that outline, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay. So I have to figure out how to present our school's martial arts to the public. So slowly over time, I didn't realize it, but I got influenced by live entertainment, different music. And I started to build it to the point where we actually had a 15,000 square foot studio that we would build a stage inside. And we have like lighting rigs and actually like smoke machines and fog and create like an actual production. And so that aided me greatly in the future as I went to move towards entertainment and live show work.
Now, speaking of your entertainment work, one thing I found fascinating looking up on you, I see you toured with Tina Turner for a while. Yeah, what was that like? That too.
Yeah, that was crazy. Well, that started with actually I had an injury, and the injury sent me to try a bunch of different things to rehab. So some friends were like, hey, try yoga, try this, try that. And actually what ended up happening is I found a ballet coach. So I was training ballet floor bar, which is like the you know how they hold the bar?
Yep.
So they do exercises standing up and on the ground. And at the time I remember thinking like, come on, is this really going to help me? But dude, it kicked my ass. It was tough. And that coach ended up also being one of the factors that pushed me to perform. And through her connections, I was introduced to Tina Turner's people. So they were coordinating her last farewell tour. And one of her friends who sings the song, oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you blow my mind.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Tony Basil. Yeah, she ended up coming to meet me and then saw my martial arts skills. And she's like, yeah, you're going to be it. So it was myself. Then I took her to my family's school and we handpicked like two other people to join us. And then we went, started to create stuff, and we presented it to Tina. And I remember Tony telling us, she goes, you know, actually, you're not, you guys aren't really hired yet. You do realize this, right? She's like, we're going to actually create this. And if Tina likes it, you'll go on tour. And I go, oh, is that how it is? Okay. Yeah. So we sat and we worked on it. But I guess Tina had already gave her okay that she likes the idea, but she'll have to see it. So I remember that we were rehearsing in Los Angeles. She came down to the studio where we were rehearsing, watched it, and absolutely loved it. So then that kicked off the tour. So
what were you doing? Like, did you have like a certain song? Like, I'm picturing you doing like, like martial arts to "What's Love Got to Do?" And you're like, you're like doing roundhouses to it. Very, very hard to picture.
Yeah. No, what happens is she has some key songs that were from motion pictures. So like GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Thunderdome from her Mad Max movie, right?
Right.
So for those type of songs, we created intros to the song. So like a minute and 30 choreographed piece that would help Tina to go do wardrobe changes and whatnot. And then we would come out and do the whole scene. And then that scene would present Tina. So in one of the scenes, it was like a minute 30. I come on stage, dress as James Bond,
nice.
do a couple moves, have a short fight, you know, and then it all presents Tina. So she comes out and does her stuff. And we basically created three numbers like that. The first skit was actually myself and two other people were dressed up as security guards. And then we had another member jump up on stage and pretend to be like a fan who jumped up, and we try to get him off. In trying to get him off, it goes into like a parkour chase and fight through her stage set. And then it reveals that, actually, these guys are going to show Tina, like going to reveal Tina.
That's pretty, I mean, like, who would ever thought, like, in fifth grade doing, you know, all different martial arts classes that you'd be on stage with Tina Turner one day doing a tour?
I remember that. When I first heard, like, I got the phone call and they said, you know, touring with Tina Turner, I just remembered, that's that lady from the cassette player. Because back then it was right?
Yep.
I remember I used to be walking through my house and I saw the Private Dancer cassette, like, in my parents' room. Private Dancer, what is that? You know, like, what is this Private Dancer? And I just, like, forget about it. But in my memory bank, that was the first thing I remembered. Oh, that's that lady from that Private Dancer thing. Okay. That's and then, funny. Of course, you research and you realize, wow, she's a superstar. And everywhere I go, sometimes I'll hear her songs playing or some kind of reference to her life. It's pretty incredible to work with someone like that, of that level.
That's amazing.
That's cool.
She probably also hired you guys just in case Ike ever came around again.
Oh, man. I think he already passed by then. But, yeah, I mean, we had a great time with her bodyguard from Germany. He was a pretty legit guy. And then we good conversations. He worked with all the stars like Kiss, Metallica, and everybody. So it was pretty
Those
cool.
guys gotta have the best stories. The guys that are just like, you don't know that they're there, but they're around all the time.
And they've been around all the time, and they're really quiet. They're not famous, but they've been everywhere. Yeah, absolutely incredible for sure. Her team, I think, had two Grammy Award winning artists on her, like one on her backup vocals and one that was just playing guitar for her. Yeah. Like, that's how amazing. Yeah,
that's crazy. Now, you are a 7-time national weapons champion. Now, what kind of weapons have you wielded? And one I would want to kind of get into, because I remember this is how I got your name. I saw a video of you with the bullwhip, which I had no idea was a martial arts kind of weapon.
Seven national championship, 7 championships and 7 different weapons, actually. So staff, Chinese martial arts has something called a straight sword and a broadsword, chain whips, 3-section staff, whip. So basically, every year I just try to do something different. And sometimes 2 times in a year, I'd switch it up. And actually, back then in those days when you performed, I remember I practiced so much that sometimes I would show up to a tournament and people would sometimes show up with 1 weapon. I would show up with 3, and then I would ask the judges.
Must have made the flight great, getting through the airport with that.
After certain things happened, I couldn't carry nothing.
Yeah, right.
But I presented to the judges and I would say, you know, which one would you like me to perform? So I had it down to that level where I had 3 full done routines. And once I started using the whip, anytime I put the whip down, they always pick the whip. So then I just started using whip all the time. And that became kind of a signature weapon and thing for me. And how that started was I was always into the more rare and esoteric forms of martial arts, whether that's the culture and philosophy, or even like the weapons or whatever. So I like to dive into researching those aspects of the art. So I thought, I want to perform a weapon that no one really does in the United States, because everyone does staff and everyone does, you know, katanas and stuff like that. And I want it to be unique. And also, when I was a kid, I used to love Zorro. That might have been an influence. You know, I love Zorro and Indiana Jones. And I was like, okay, I want to crack a whip. So I knew it existed in Filipino martial arts and existed in Chinese martial arts. But I didn't know anyone who could teach me. So what happened was I ended up going to China to try to study. I tried to find a teacher of whip. But by the time I got there, my whip skills were already to the level of anyone that I ran into, to the point where I had some unique patterns that I made up on my own that I ended up teaching them. So what I did is once I got myself a whip, I used my martial arts knowledge that I had learned and try to figure out different ways to move it and patterns to move it to try to create a unique system. Like, okay, how would this make sense for me? Now, over the years, of course, certain people did help me refine it and improve it. But as it started, it was kind of like just a self-practice hobby.
Now, give us a little insight to, obviously, like, we're not big martial arts guys. What goes into winning, like, a weapon, you know, competition? Like, is it all a routine? Is there certain skills that are required? What goes into the overall event?
Yeah, a weapons routine competition is fairly simple. So basically, there's five judges, and they score you on their little parameters of what they feel is good. So they look at your stances, your coordination. They will take into consideration the difficulty of the weapon you're using, and they just judge you on that. So it's almost akin to like a gymnastics floor routine that you're presenting yourself in your martial art. So there's no combat involved, although now, lately, there has been, and I'm kind of interested in that. It looks pretty cool. There's a weapon fighting competitions in China using like the medieval weapons. And yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. So pretty straightforward, just a forms routine, yeah.
That's awesome. Have you done so much with performing and learning skills and everything, but I also see you created a group called the Kung Fu Heroes. Can you tell our audience a little about that?
Sure. So in 2010, basically I was at our studio and we wanted to try to do something new. So I just got off the Tina tour, just did a bunch of other like successive shows. And I thought, let's figure out how to do something big in the United States that people could see. So at the time, I was getting ready to go to Europe for a seminar, and I saw a newspaper clipping of America's Got Talent auditions. And I thought, aha, this is it. So even though I wasn't there for the first audition, I gathered a group together from our studio and said, all right, guys, put something together and go get us in the TV show. But that being said, we established the group name as the team that went to the TV show and kept it on ever since. And right now, as of today, we have about 7 athletes from the Kung Fu Heroes who are working for Cirque du Soleil as performing artists. And also, you know, they're traveling and involved in like motion pictures and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. It's been a nice like launching point for everybody to get on. And currently now we're rebranding the company to be a learning company. So we hope that later this year we'll have the opportunity for people to study online and also join us for teaching events around the world. So last year we did our first one, which was taking a group of people to the Shaolin Temple in China, which was a historical cradle of Kung Fu, I would say. And we took about 40 people there to train for a full 10 days.
Now, let me ask you, you have so many skills, I guess is the word to say, or you're training so many things. Is there like is there one discipline that you say like kind of encompasses like a little bit of everything and you think is the most effective or what I'm kind of saying in a roundabout way is, do you have a favorite or like a recommendation for like someone who was starting martial arts what to get into, or is it all, or does everything kind of provide something for everyone, like a little different?
Yeah, each of the martial arts has its own, you know, positives and negatives. The first thing you have to look for is, what are you looking to get out of the art? So if you want to learn to, let's say, improve some aspect of yourself, whether that's physically or mentally, there's martial arts that are specifically geared towards that. If mm-hmm. it's purpose of self-defense, then there's martial arts that are better suited for that than others. For instance, self-defense on the ground, self-defense standing up,
right.
Multiple attackers. So realistically, it's just about what you want. Of course, we're all human beings, but we all have a diverse set of needs in terms of where we are at certain points in our life. For instance, how I would train as a young kid is not going to be how I train when I'm 50 years old.
Right.
So for me, it's hard because you have to find a good coach and a good teacher who's in line with your needs and who understands your needs and can make martial arts a lifelong journey and study.
One more question for you, Phil, before we let you go. We've had like professional wrestlers on this show, different fighters, and they all talk about stories where they go out and there's always that one guy who wants to go up to him and say, "You're not so tough." Just out of curiosity, have you ever had that kind of story or anything like that where people know your background and still want to try to talk some kind of trash to you?
Not since I was a kid, you know, because basically I think I'm so far removed because I don't generally go out too much and I don't try to go to places where they start fights.
Yep.
And I try a level of my life where I respect other people. I don't try to get like bump my chest and say, "Here's my resume," you know? So yeah, I've been fortunate enough to avoid that situation. Thankfully.
Yep.
I don't go look. Problems, and I don't think gloating about it is good either, you know.
Yeah. Now, before you go, Phil, let me ask you one thing. First off, if people want to check you out or say hi to you or see your videos or follow you on Instagram, where can they go? And two, after all these years of obviously pushing your body to, you know, you do everything from Cirque du Soleil to martial arts to even Tina Turner. That's going to take a toll on the body. How's your body holding up? Are you perfectly fine? Are you getting strong? Or do you have, like, lingering any kind of, like, injuries or whatnot?
Well, yeah. So at first I thought that if I go into performing art, it might be safer than fighting. But in the end, when you push yourself to that professional level, there's always inherent risks. And I have a saying that if you try to make the limited become unlimited, you will suffer. And as long as you're willing to accept the suffering that will endure from trying to become unlimited, then it'll be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I have had my fair share of injuries. As of right now, I'm actually pretty mobile. So I'm just working on my flexibility and just joint health, overall joint health, because to me, that's going to be the thing that keeps me functional in my old age. I just want to be able to walk well and speak well.
Right.
Yeah, that's my first concern. But of course, you know, I've had chipped bones in my elbow. I've had slip discs and dislocated ankles and torn hamstring. A lot of different things. But over the years, you also get wiser. You learn how to persevere and train a little bit smarter so you can just reduce that. And then moving forward, I want to return back to coaching so I can help young athletes avoid those kind of mistakes and learn how to treat their bodies. I don't want to say better, but just be safer with it and understand the consequences that can happen. You know, like I said, if you're performing anything, the amount of time that I've performed it, or even just within 1 year of CERC, 470 times, the chances for mistake are quite high.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But in terms of where to find me, they can find me on Instagram at Kung Fu Phillip. They can go online at kungfuheroes.com and subscribe so they can learn about the training programs we're going to create and the events where they can actually go learn.
Awesome, man. So thank you, one, for the time, and good luck with, obviously, Cirque du Soleil and whatever else you got going on. Obviously, you found a distinct way to diversify yourself in the martial arts, not only just the skills, but just getting out there and trying different things. So we appreciate the time, and good luck with everything.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thank you guys so much, and wish you all a great day. Thank you all for listening as well.
All right. So you going to start doing Kenpo or Shaolin Kung Fu or Wushu anytime soon?
Drunken Panda. That's the plan.
And what exactly is Drunken Panda, Mike? Why don't you explain to our audience?
I don't really know. I heard that was a name used in like a Jackie Chan movie, like Drunken Master or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the drinking part down. So I feel naturally, eventually, the whole fighting style comes with it.
Oh.
It's kind of like a Irish style, if you will.
Oh, so the panda part, where does that come in?
I think I got confused and just added Kung Fu Panda into that Jackie Chan movie.
There you go. Now the truth comes out.
Yeah. Oh, I admit when I screw up, and it happens a lot. It's just I got to make sure I realize I screwed up.
Yeah, he was cool, man. He's done a lot of different things. Like I said, it's got to be really weird. Like when you sit back and you think, like, how the hell did I get here? And you're like on stage with Tina Turner, and that like that stemmed from like you being in a martial arts family from when you were like in third grade or whatever. He said when he was 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah. So what you can tell any one of your like 5 year old kids, like, I don't want to go to Taekwondo. You just say, listen. You can end up on stage with Tina Turner playing James Bond, and they'll say who, and shut up and just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, anyways. So, I guess I'll get into this real quick. So, obviously, my wedding is coming up very, very soon, and there's a... You know, we're in the insane planning part of it, and a lot of things to remember and iron out and do, and you know, it becomes it's a lot. It's a lot to remember. A lot every day seems like there's something to catch up on, and so a lot to do is what I'm saying. And you know, you sometimes you forget. You know, you kind of get dragged away from what the actual meaning of it is, and you're worried about invitations and flowers and things like that, and you start to lose your husbandly duties, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
I didn't do it, but go on, you bad person, you.
Yeah. So I you want to be a good husband. So I found this interesting test, Berlo, that you know, you being just recently married.
Okay.
And me being getting married in the next six weeks. By the time this comes out, it'll be like 4 weeks. But this is a 1950s test, okay, released by Dr. Ooh. George W. Crane, okay? He was an author, a lecturer, an educator, a doctor of medicine, and a psychologist, okay?
Oh.
And he released, back in the day, a little quiz that you can take that has demerits and merits for your spouse, okay?
Gotcha.
And if they're being a good husband or a good wife. And I think he released it under sex differences between men and women and nagging wives.
Hmm. That title would work really well right now.
Yeah. This would probably go over. So, fortunately, Dr. Crane also claims to – he released one on women at one point. But he also claims to have assembled a squad of 600 women to list the pros and cons of their husbands. Okay,
gotcha.
And you know, we're gonna look at what from a women's point of view in the 1950s, Mike, what that would earn you either a merit or a demerit. And I thought it would be interesting after we take this to give the actual scale to our significant others and see how we do.
Gotcha. Okay.
So after we kind of analyze some of the information, maybe we can see what we would actually score, because there's a whole computing thing where it says in computing the score, check the various items under demerits which fit the husband and add the total. Each item counts 1 point unless specifically weighted, as in parentheses. So there's a whole thing here. The result is the husband's raw score, according it to the, and you could score it to the table. You could be very poor, poor, average, superior, or very superior.
Hmm. Gotcha. So, like, if I say please when I yell at her to get my slippers when I walk in the store, that's like 4 points, right?
Probably.
Yeah. I got a feeling I'm a great 1950s husband and the world's worst one right now.
Hey, honey.
Hey, doll, what's cooking?
You're really the bee's knees last night. What's for dinner? Mm.
You've been a good chickadee. We're going to go out and do the hucklebuck.
I'll put on that poodle skirt. We're going out. So, you know, naturally being nervous, here are some things that maybe I could learn from and see where I fall. So, Burley, you want to hear? Would you like to hear some merits and demerits?
It'll be a short podcast if I say no, so let's continue.
All right. I guess we'll always start with the merit side and then see what would get you a demerit in that category. Okay? So,
gotcha.
Burlow, give wife ample allowance or turn paycheck over to her. That would get you a merit.
Okay.
Okay. A demerit, stares at or flirts with other women while out with the wife.
Ooh.
No.
Women still don't like that, apparently.
Some things don't change.
Damn it. This is the future. We got to be more communionized and allow. I'm just a dirtbag. Continue.
Yeah. Okay. So the second on the merit list would be you got to be courteous to your wife's friends, Berlou. Are you courteous to your wife's friends?
We don't really have many down here, so I guess by rule, yes.
Yes. Okay. I think you're a pretty courteous guy. Burlew, you would get a demerit if you read the newspaper at the table. So I guess...
I didn't know they still happen.
Well, I'm guessing like we can kind of like update that and be like, read your cell phone maybe at the table.
The tablet? Okay.
Yep. Next merit would be frequently compliments wife, her looks, her cooking, her housekeeping.
Okay.
A demerit would be you fail to come to the table promptly when the meal is ready.
Considering how much Izzy cooks, I'm pretty good in that category.
Burlew, are you good at, you would get a merit if you remember birthdays, anniversaries, okay, etc. Are you good at that?
Yep.
Okay.
Very good at that.
What about if you bring guests home for meals without warning the wife?
I'm guessing demerit, Scotty.
You would get a merit, Mike, if you helped the wife with the dishes, caring for children, and scrubbing. It's very anonymous scrubbing. It just could be – you could be scrubbing anything. Just
the child or the plate.
The wall.
As long as somebody's getting a brush – there's points involved. I'd like it.
You don't phone them when you're late for dinner. That would get you a demerit. So if you're going to be late for dinner, because Mike, as we know, a good wife will have dinner piping hot on the table. You know?
That roast has got to be crisp and warm and ready to go the second I walk through the door.
All right. Burlew, are you polite and mannerly even when alone with the wife?
I would say so, but I do have my Burlew charm from time to time. Ah,
this one can get you in trouble, Burlew. Demerit compares the wife unfavorably with his mother or other wives. Oof. So you say, oh, you're acting like my mother right now.
I do remember one explosion.
Yes.
That was a while ago.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us the story.
I'm trying to remember the exact details of it, but it was I got to think about it. I'm sure I'll have it ready for next week's episode.
Yeah, okay.
But I do remember some conversation ending with me yelling, you're just like my mother.
Oof. So you would get a merit if you consult the wife's opinion on businesses and social affairs. You would get a demerit if you publicly praise bachelor days and regrets of getting married. Yeah, that hasn't changed.
that really needed to be printed? Or just some dude saying, listen, all I said was this marriage is a scam. I don't understand why I lost 2 points.
So I'm going to do a rapid fire of some merits for you. Some merits of good things you would do. If you read the newspaper, books, or magazines, if you read them, Berlow, if you read them aloud to the wife, so you don't, you have to read them because obviously she probably can't read as good as you, you know? So.
Yeah.
If you
the women them. Got that weak eyesight and all. I mean, it's a common thing, and thank God for men, or we can never see the troubles in this world. But continue.
If you're a good conversationalist, you're a steady worker and a good provider, you leave the car for a wife on day. What does that say? On days she may need it, so you leave it on, like, because you know you're a one car household. So when she needs it, you just leave that thing running for her.
Yeah, women don't need their cars, you know. That's a man kind of property.
Berlow, get a merit if you're handy about fixing irons and vacuums and hanging pictures for her. You know, you're...
I can't remember the last time I fixed an iron. I got to be brutally honest with you, Scotty.
If you enjoy taking the wife along with you, you're getting a merit. You don't interfere with the wife's correction of the children, so you just let her beat them on her own.
I guess I would be our dog in this scenario. But okay.
You carry adequate insurance for the family. You don't quarrel with the wife before children or the public. You make guests feel welcome. You often tell the wife you love her. You usually come home with a smile. You share your business and personal problems with her. You're good humored in the morning, Berlow. That can be tough. That can be tough sometimes.
That's a rough one. We're both a little crankpots in the morning, too. So.
Ooh, you're interested in athletics. You write often and lovingly when away from home. You're willing to go shopping with the wife. You're neat in appearance. You attend church and urge children to attend Sunday school. You attend parent-teacher meetings. You're ambitious. You surprise her with gifts. You willingly prepare your own breakfast, Berlow.
No. Like, get up, pour them Cheerios. They ain't going to do it themselves.
You're an ardent lover. You see that the wife has an orgasm in marital congress. Marital congress. When's the last time you heard that?
While we were passionate, she yelled congress. You know.
This is the best marital congress I've ever had.
We had to change the sheets thanks to marital congress.
You're a careful auto driver. Your children are pleased when you come home. You give your wife real movie kisses, not dutiful pecks on the cheek. If the wife is ill, phone from work to inquire about her. You neatly hang up your clothes with hooks or hangers. All right, so those are all good things, bro. How do you feel like you fit into that category?
I feel I'm a great husband. I mean, I just keep on hearing more and more things, and I'm like, good me. Good Berlow. I'm just going to walk upstairs at the end of this podcast and yell, you're welcome, and then go to bed.
And slam the door and be like, make sure breakfast is ready in the morning.
Those eggs were a little runny yesterday. Didn't appreciate that. You got a merit.
Yep. All right, so now, Berlow, this is where it can go south. You know, your demerits. So let's rifle through a couple of these.
All right.
You criticize the wife in public. All right. You leave dresser drawers open. Oof, I'm getting a demerit there. You leave shoes in the living room. I'm getting a demerit there.
Probably get one there.
You snore. I'm getting a demerit there.
Yep.
Careless in the bathroom. You leave your razor out or a ring around the tub. I'm getting a demerit there.
I'll do it because I don't always put the toilet paper up when I'm done.
You fail to bathe or change socks often enough. I'm good, man. I shower a lot.
Yeah.
Fail to brush teeth regularly or keep clean nails. I brush my teeth a lot.
I don't know. Your dentist thing, Scotty. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
This marriage might not last. I'm sorry.
How does dirt even get under your nails? I don't even get it. Like, I don't work in the fields or like a physical job, but yet sometimes my nails are just like just got a bunch of dirt hanging under there.
I don't have the scientific reasoning, so we'll have to tune in next week to find out.
All right, well, you pick your teeth, your nose, in public. I guess inside is no big deal. You object to the wife driving the automobile. You use profanity or vulgarity. I'm getting a lot of demerits here. complain about being too tired to go out at night with the wife. You're suspicious and jealous. You use alcohol. You're angry if the newspaper is disarranged.
Listen, I know I haven't picked up one of these in 15 years, but God damn it, comics do not go in the front.
It's so crooked. I like
page
this.
Page 2 to page 6. What the hell?
I like this one. Talks of efficiency of his stenographer or other women.
What the? Was there stenographer problems back in the 50s? Was that a routine thing? I got to Google what a stenographer is.
You don't remember anything I take down, but Janice from The Office, she's a real good stenographer.
Yeah. You know who listened to me, babe? The person in court when they had that DUI. Not like you. You're selfish.
All right. Michael, you might smoke in bed. You get a demerit if you smoke in bed. This one's mean. You tease your wife's fatness, slowness, or et cetera.
Wow.
Yeah. you call out, "Where's the blank?" without first hunting for the object. You monopolize radio on Sunday for baseball broadcasts. You dislike children or scold them too harshly. You write on a tablecloth with a pencil. You write on a tablecloth with a pencil. you argue with or curse other motorists. You're addicted to gambling. Bro, this is a good one. You eat onions, radishes, or garlic before dates or going to bed.
Oh, yeah. When we were going out, man, I would have a big old bag of radishes and then go see my babe. That's how I rolled back in the day. They called me old radish.
Get over here, radish breath. Get over here.
Oh. Singles night, you're like, oh, shit, there's radish over there. I don't know. I ain't talking to that boy.
You open your wife's mail. You boast about your former girl. Okay, you boast about her. You kiss wife just after you make up. That's it. You leave lights burning all over the house. And you're too much of a bookworm. You don't talk to the wife enough when you get home. So, Berlo, that is, they gave that to 600 women to see where their husbands fell. And maybe we'll have our significant others fill this out.
Nothing about having too crooked of legs thanks to polio or anything like that?
You got polio legs. It's hard to move them around in bed.
Ah, that's why you're so tired and you can't go out with me. Demerit.
So I'll send that on over and you tell me how you fare next week. We'll have Izzy filled out on you and we'll have Alex filled out on me.
I don't want you to be jealous of my score. I'm just telling you, Scotty.
Dude, I was doing...
I know you're just getting into this marriage.
But I was doing really good on the merit side. I was like, I do that. And then the merits, I had a bunch of them.
Oh, man. you build a time machine. Don't bring your girl back to 1950. Mm-hmm. Some of the other ladies will be chatting her up, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Got to get a divorce 70, 80 years ago.
Yep. So that is the 1950s Berlo once again coming in strong. We got
some of our biggest audiences from the 1950s.
We get numbers like the 1950s.
Yep. Well, Scotty, we're on the tail end of March, so I figure we got to do a bracket before we leave this month here.
Oh, boy. All right.
Yeah. Now, I will save you by saying I made this one a lot lighter than the last one, where I had 64 different options, and we had about a 2.5 hour of podcast that night.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so basically this bracket is all the things we did on the show that you probably weren't thrilled about, to see which one you would bring back for the show.
Okay, so these are things that we've done on the show. Yeah. And
certain things that's related to the show, and basically I'm going to give you two options, an upfront battle. Each one has a similar category, and as we go along we just see which thing you're going to want to see back on the show, Scotty.
Okay, all right, so I got to choose the one that I would want to do again. All right,
exactly,
let's do it.
All right, my first matchup is bad taste in your mouth. Would you rather be eating ghost peppers the entire show or drinking Bud Light Clamato?
Oh, God. I'm going to have to say that I will I'll drink the Clamato. The ghost peppers the entire show would be impossible, right? Clamato would just be gross. So there's a difference there. Like I said, ghost peppers would be absolutely impossible. So I'm going to go with Clamato.
All right. Short-lived ideas is this category, Scott. Would you bring back the Alien podcast or the Leprechaun movie review?
I would bring back the Alien podcast. I think Alien Sundays would still have a it still would have an audience. I just don't, we got maybe a little too drunk and attempted to do it, and it just never saw the light of day. So I would definitely bring that back.
Okay. This one, Scotty feeling a little uncomfortable. Would you rather bring back SS Humiliation with the same game that basically cheated for me?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you rather do the FMK with the female serial killers again?
I'll bring back SS Humiliation any day. In fact, I've thought about that before. And for those of you who are like, what the hell are they talking about? We played Battleship, where your largest ship was your most embarrassing story and your smallest ship was like an embarrassing story, and they kind of built their way up. And Berlu cheated the entire time.
I cheated with the game that you picked out.
There was a significant glitch in that game. Put it this way. Everything was a hit.
Yeah, apparently my boats were diagonal somehow.
And then the FMK, that just got weird. That was really hard to even figure out with the women's serial killers. Some of them were absolutely just brutal. So in fact, SS Humiliation will probably make another appearance. So,
beautiful. Scotty, going to an event with some of our former guests, are you going LARPing or hanging out with Man Pops?
LARPing was a pretty good time. It was kind of weird. But I think I'll hang out with Man Pups just because we haven't actually hung out with them in person. We've talked to them. You've hung out with them, but I've never seen them. So, that's...
Scotty, stop making up stuff for our new audience.
Yeah, so you do that stuff on the weekends. I've never done it, so I'm going to go hang out with Man Pups.
Wow, that's beautiful. All right, here we go with another category of Let's Do That Again. You have to record another podcast interview with these people. Is it the Renster, Aaron McManus, or Gandhi Jones?
I go with the Renster. She wasn't too bad. We just, that was one of the first interviews we really got to talk to people. She was a pool player. She still plays pool. Gandhi Jones, pretty limited. I feel like how much more could we go into the mustache? At least it seems like the Renster over there is still playing pool, so I'm going to go with the Renster.
So you're saying mustache champions are very one-dimensional?
Yeah. One and done.
Oh, okay. The next one is, I wonder where that interview went. You have to re-interview one of these people. Is it Sherry Lee Laird, a.k.a. Marilyn Monroe returning, or Veed Virks?
All right. So for those who don't know what the hell we're talking about, these are both interviews that didn't make the cut, and one of them happened to be a woman who thought she was convinced she was Marilyn Monroe, like she was her reincarnated. And it wasn't so much as the concept, because it kind of could have been, but there was birds chirping in the background. She's like, oh my God, the birds won't shut up. And she was this absolute nut job. And then Veedvorks was they had an interesting story about like trying to sponsor this really poor driver, and they ended up just talking about their pot company, like really boringly for like 30 minutes straight. And
to
both
the scientific level.
Yeah. And both interviews were not released. So, I'll bring back Marilyn Monroe because I feel like maybe in the right the right setting with no birds that maybe she could be somewhat interesting. So I'm going to bring back Marilyn Monroe.
All right. These two things, you have to make a choice. You would have to do a face-to-face interview with them by yourselves in a room for 3 hours. Are you redoing the Ghost Cast or the director of Unicorn Killer?
Unicorn Killer. Just because, I don't know, maybe he directed some other things that we haven't talked about, and maybe he's interesting. And two, he is not Melissa Allen.
That is true. That's always a positive.
Yes, yes.
And that will never stop. That's two podcasts in this week talking about Melissa Allen. So
correct. So maybe she'll hear some of these.
Yeah. And then finally, the two other guests that... let's say have a grand old time talking to again. Is it going to be Sleep King Tony Wright or Sam Schreiber?
Oh yeah, we interviewed a guy. We wanted him to be on for his sleep deprivation stories, and he just kept like trying to talk about what was his diet or something like that.
His herbs and what causes him to stay up, even though he talked about. Yeah, it would be hallucinating and trying to break into people's cars and all while I was half asleep.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the interesting stuff. I'll go with Sam Shriver. It wasn't the most exciting interview, but he was at least a nice guy. Like, the other guy kind of seemed, I don't know, sorry, buddy, like, you just weren't a very pleasant dude. So I'm going to go with Sam Shriver.
Okay. We're in the next round, Scotty.
All right.
So, what are you preferring to do? Are you drinking Bud Light Clamato all through the podcast, or are you going to bring back the Alien podcast?
I'm going to bring back the Alien podcast, man. Again, we're real inside football here. The Alien podcast, we were going to review an Alien movie, like on a Sunday, and record and just take a... if we thought it held up, if we thought it was still good, some thoughts like at different stopping points in the movie. So I think it's still got an audience. I'm gonna bring back Alien Sunday. No one wants to drink Clamato in the second round.
They were the 16th seed. They're just glad to get through the first round.
Exactly.
And are you bringing back your failed SS humiliation? Or are you going out with man pops?
Well, considering SS Humiliation was a good game, it definitely was a great game. It just had some glitches.
It was.
It had glitches, which we can definitely figure that out. And it happens to be in Verbal Shenanigans lore the highest downloaded episode. So I'm going to choose that.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Are you going to be chatting with the Rinster, Aaron McManus, or Marilyn Monroe, Sherry Lee Laird?
Just for fresh content, I'm going to go with Marilyn Monroe.
Okay.
It never saw the light of day, so maybe if we did it a second time, which we won't, it might be interesting the second time.
And are you doing a three-hour podcast talking about Unicorn Killer and the sexual acts in it, or are you talking to Sam Shriver?
Oof, rough one. Rough second round here. Because now that I almost feel like I'm in the second round, so I already talked to Sam Shriver again in the first round. So just for maybe some spice and some craziness, I'm going to go with the unicorn guy.
Okay. All right, we're down to our final four, Scotty. Are we bringing back the Alien podcast or SS Humiliation?
That's a tough one. I feel like both of these... I feel like both of these have legs and would be interesting listens. For podcast's sake, I'm going to bring back... I'm going to bring back...
It's the thinker.
Yeah. I'm going to bring back SS Humiliation because even recently I wanted to do it again. I was trying to think of stories that would... Because, listen, I got plenty of more embarrassing stories where they came from. And I think it would be good for a new audience to listen to because that was probably episode... God, who knows?
I want to say 40 to 50 something.
Yeah, I was going to say 52 or something like that. I don't know. I'll check it out right over shenanigans. So yeah, I would bring that back. Episode 56. So I would bring that back to see the light of day again.
All right. And are you talking with Marilyn Monroe or are you talking to Unicorn Killer?
I can't believe both of these made it through. I'll go with Marilyn Monroe. You know, this is like when two like really great schools are in the same bracket and like one of them has to lose, you know, like by great I mean terrible. So I'm going to go with Marilyn Monroe.
All right, but so for our final, Scotty, are you chancing a nerd glitched up game where you're telling all your humiliating stories and I'm not telling any, or are you going to be sitting down with birds in the background as a woman says that she was Marilyn Monroe and we can't get a hold of her doctor who will back her up?
Well, Berlo, the reason I'm going to choose SS Humiliation, one, you didn't really have to tell too many stories, so you still have a bunch out there. Right. So there's some mystery still.
I told a couple. I talked about stealing a coffee machine from my work.
I know, but I'm saying. So there might be a couple stories that we didn't even get to. So there's more intrigue for you to lose. Like people are rooting, like the Patriots, people are rooting for you to lose. You know, I keep getting emails every week like, no, we're not playing it again. No. They're like, we want to hear Berlo's stories. I'm like, guys, you know, we got guests to come. Like, relax. Like, can't do that.
Exactly.
And just more and more and more. So, you know, I might have to answer the fans' call. So I'm going to go with, I'm going to bring back SS Humiliation.
All right, Scotty, where our tournament is done, you're going to come back and get humiliated again. I'm going to figure out some kind of programming to make sure I don't have to tell any stories. And you talk about your uncle throwing watermelons in the pool, and we'll all have a great time.
In the meantime, go check that episode out. That was a long time ago, but that one had some funny stuff on it. The audio quality might not be the same or whatever, but that was a fun one. Berlo, let's get on out of here. What do you got to promote?
I will promote myself because I'm going to be start doing some videos on my Facebook page. That's facebook.com/DABURLS721. Or you can look it up as Michael Berlo Random Stuff. I'm going to be doing some videos with my wife and all chatting about different subjects. We're going to dive into some Disney stuff as she tries to say I'm a Disney nerd as I exclaim to her that I am not anywhere close to her field. So that's going to be coming up in the next few weeks. We're going to be aiming to be doing it on Thursday nights live, and obviously it'll be on the page. So check it out, facebook.com/DABURLS721.
You can find that on the Mass Serial Killer Network, the Disney Serial Killer Network.
You talk a lot about who's serial killers. I mean, are you trying to hide something, Scotty?
Oh, yeah. No.
Like, I've been seeing some of your Facebook posts, and it's like, this person's serial killer, this person's serial killer. Mm-hmm. That's usually what a serial killer does, and all tries to deter you from the true source of the murder.
Listen, I just know a serial killer when I see one. I'm good at identifying serial killers. That's what it comes down to.
That sounds like a great reality show.
And listen, I mean, I've been
like four guys come up and you have to figure out the serial killer.
It's like The Bachelor. Like, yeah. At the end, I got to hand him like the knife and be like, you're the one.
Or what's that one from like the 50s and all where they ask questions. You had to, who's telling a lie. I gotta look it up, but that was like,
yeah,
an
like
old
two truths and a lie or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, to tell the truth. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm gonna promote, I guess, a friend of ours. A fellow comedian, Ty Rainey, a very funny comedian, has a new podcast he just kind of started called The Pancake Social. If you go to his YouTube channel and check out comedian Ty Rainey, that's T-Y-R-A-N-E-Y. Check out, so there's four episodes up, so you can go check out. He interviews New Jersey comedians while they like eat pancakes. So it's kind of like it's kind of like the Wing Show. What the hell? Hot Ones meets Ty Rainey and pancakes. So that's it, man. I guess that's it, Berlo. Life is, well, I guess real quick, make sure you check us out on multiple platforms. We have, let's see. We got a whole bunch of them. All right. So any podcast network you know, or any podcast listening app that you know, check us out on the BS Podcast Network, comingrightup.org, Discovery County Network, and our new one, Berlo, is...
I'm bringing it up now. Just
it's a hard one to remember.
Letters. It is WHBJ-DB, Cutting Edge Talk Radio.
Exactly, which is exactly how we describe ourselves. So, I guess with that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Follow us on social media. And keep the wind at your back. Adios. Bye-bye.